Buffalo!
Let's go, Buffalo! Buffalo, let's go! Hey, let's go, Buffalo! Buffalo,
it's time for Bills Mafia Talk. Here's Joel Orion.
Welcome in, everybody. Don't forget to be part of the conversation, to leave a voicemail, or send a text, 607-252-4BMT. That's 252-4BMT, 4268. Well, it's Dolphins Week, and you know what that means. A lot of squish the fish signs, a lot of squish the fish memes and GIFs on social media. Miami comes to town 1-6. They've lost six in a row. They are struggling, that is for sure. The Buffalo Bills are 4-2, coming off of that tough Monday night primetime game against the Tennessee Titans. To find out what's going on with this Miami Dolphins team, let's bring somebody in who's in the know, behind enemy lines, to tell us what's going on. He works at AM 560 WQAM, the flagship station of the Miami Dolphins. He is the executive producer of Hockman and Crowder, 2-6. On AM 560 The Joe, and only in radio would you do something so goofy and silly as calling something The Joe. I mean, I hear other stations are called Jack FM or Jill FM or Frank FM, or I've even heard Dave FM now. I've heard a lot of Bob FMs. Not a lot of Joel's. I was almost excited when I saw this. I almost thought it was going to be Joel, but it was just Joe. No L. But naming a radio station after yourself is probably right up there in the top three or four of the most egotistical things you can do. Probably naming a human being after yourself would be number one. I tried to do that. My ex said no. Naming a building after yourself, although I always thought the Orient Arena had a good ring to it. I've just never made enough money to buy naming rights to an arena. And third, naming a radio station after yourself. Not many other industries can you do something like that. He is a great follow on Twitter, Alex M. Solano. Let's bring him on. Alex, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. And you know what's funny about us being called 560 The Joe? First and foremost, nobody in Miami liked that name. I'll tell you right now off the bat, nobody, not even the guy who most people thought the radio station was being named after, the morning host, Joe Rose, former Dolphin.
Okay.
We actually rebranded 2 days ago.
Oh, wow.
So right now, we are now officially no longer The Joe. We are now, and you know, nobody knows this really, because it wasn't that big of a rollout in the middle of Dolphin season. We are now back to AM 560 Sports WQAM. So we can drop the Joe.
Sure.
No more Joe.
I like it. That, you know, because when I think, you know, Miami sports and sports talk radio, you know, I think of those call letters and I thought Joe, and I was like, why not like Dano from Marino or Shula,
right,
and Don or Bob Greasy? I didn't know Joe, but Joe Rose. Okay, I get the connection. Now, let me ask you a question. But before I do that, is my research correct? You guys are the flagship station of the Miami Dolphins down there in Miami, correct?
Correct. So I am the producer on Hawk and Crowder, but I host the Dolphins Rewind show on the flagship of the Dolphins, and I'm actually traveling with the team. I'll be in Buffalo producing the radio broadcast with our broadcast team. So,
nice.
You know, before this interview's over, we'll talk some Dolphins, we'll preview the game. I need to know the spot I got to hit in Buffalo, okay? So don't let me forget. Write that down. You guys got to give me the spots to hit in Buffalo this weekend.
All right, we can do that. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this as surprising, the record and performance so far?
Oh, 10. No doubt, 10. In terms of 1 being not as surprised, 10 being as surprised as possible, to 10. This team has regressed. In year 3 of this rebuild under general manager Chris Greer and head coach Brian Flores, to a degree that nobody, I don't think in Miami, I don't think nationally, saw coming. I mean, this team last year was 1 win away from the playoffs. As you all know, the Bills and Josh Allen handled them nicely. I think the final score was, what, 1,050-13?
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong there.
Yep.
It was a total annihilation for the Dolphins in Buffalo, but everybody felt like they were just 1 win away from the playoffs, because they were, and they just felt like it was the progression of Tua Tagovailoa that would eventually get them into the playoffs. And we felt coming into this season down here, the defense was set, no problems with the Miami defense. We felt this was a disciplined football team. You hear Brian Flores talk constantly, and it's coach speak, everybody says it, but complimentary football. And other than the offense last season, just a lack of weapons for Tua, who constantly was getting pulled for Ryan Fitzpatrick, you felt like this team was just one step away. And then you mix that with the additions of Will Fuller. You mix that with, you know, some of these other offensive weapons that you added, Jalen Waddle in the draft. You get back Albert Wilson. Devontae Parker, you're hoping he can be healthy. Preston Williams, who was on the IR, it felt like, all of last season. Combine all of those things. I mean, we thought, truthfully, everybody here, the guys who were watching spring training camp, the guys nationally who kind of had their eye on the Dolphins, thought that this would be a team, at the very least, competing for a wild card spot. And I'll tell you right now, year three, this team has regressed in every single way possible. This is not a good defense, as if you look at the numbers, they rank almost dead last in every single possible category. Yep. They let Matt Ryan and Trevor Sam Lawrence beat them in crucial moments of the game, which is why they're now 1-6. And offensively, Tua Tagovailoa has been okay since returning from that injury he suffered against Buffalo in week two, but no run game, offensive line troubles all over the place, and even special teams. This team just can't seem to get it together. Again, when I tell you they've regressed in every single way possible, I can't stress it enough.
Yeah.
This is not a good football team, and I'll tell you right now, the way we feel here in Miami, this rebuild officially has been deemed a failure. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Wow. How long of a leash does Flores have and the GM have if they finish this season, let's say, 2 or 3 games below 500?
Yeah, well, I mean, 2 or 3 games below 500 right now would be a miracle. I mean, this is a team that's lost 6 in a row. And let's be real. You guys know what's happening this Sunday in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. This team will suffer their 7th straight defeat. They will be 1-7 going into week 9. There's no doubt about it. This team is not good enough to beat a Buffalo team, which I know you're coming off the Monday Night Football loss, but hey, you guys are a very good football team. Probably the best, arguably, right now in the AFC. So this team will be far from 2 or 3 games under 500. You kind of have to start at the top, right? Chris Greer, when he starts making all these trades a couple years ago, not sure if you remember the Laremy Tunsil trade, yeah, where you kind of mortgage your future and you collect all this draft capital asset, which is what everybody was looking forward to. I mean, Chris Greer was seen as a god down here in South Florida. We're going to have 3 first-round picks and one of the best drafts that, at the time, anybody could remember. I mean, that was seen as the move of the century for Dolphins fans. Truthfully, like, that's what it was seen as. People were calling Chris Greer a god down here. And right now, the third guy that you selected in that first round, Noah Igbinoghene, safety out of Auburn, can't get on the field. Can't get on the field the one game he played versus Jacksonville because of injuries to Xavien Howard and Byron Jones. He got toasted all over the field. Austin Jackson, your left tackle that you drafted in the, I think he was 13th or 14th overall, unplayable. They've had to move him to guard and bring in Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame because he is unplayable at the moment. And even at guard, you try to cover up your mistakes. He is just a total disaster. Dolphins fans have had enough of him. And Tua Tagovailoa, again, this is a guy that they took 5th overall. Can't help but look at what Justin Herbert's doing, drafted right behind him. I don't think that you can put the blame on Tua. I think right now you're looking at a situation where Chris Greer, the general manager, I don't see how he can survive past this season. Now, there are reports that Stephen Ross, the owner, and has no interest in getting rid of Chris Greer, but things can change from one day to the next. I struggle to put this on Brian Flores. Brian Flores is given the personnel that he is given. It's not really understood if Brian Flores had a hand in some of these draft selections, but bottom line is, if Chris Greer goes, then you're bringing in a new general manager.
Right.
Will that general manager want to inherit Brian Flores and kind of the mess that he's dealt with right now or facing right now? I don't know. That has to be worked out, obviously, with the owner, Stephen Ross. But I think it starts at the top with Chris Greer and the draft selections he's made. Mm-hmm. Having assets is great. Trading for draft capital, great. But in year 3, if none of that comes to fruition and works out, then truthfully, you're dealing with a situation where you're supposed to be in year 3 of this rebuild,
right,
buying for a playoff position, and you may be in a worse position now than you were 3 years ago when you started preparing to be in this position. So I don't know how Chris Greer survives another season here in Miami.
So if you think Tua might be the guy, What are your thoughts on this Deshaun Watson thing? One, it could be a big distraction. And two, we don't know what the off-the-field stuff is going to.
Right.
A lot of people feel it's very weird, the situation, that they're allowing Watson to stand on the sideline. I would be afraid to trade for him, and then the NFL decide to come in if they get heat in this cancel culture and say put him on the exemption list.
Right, yeah. So, and look, these rumors are swirling nonstop. Just today, there were three or four more reports that came out that a deal has been agreed upon, but Stephen Ross and the Dolphins are desperate to find out from Roger Goodell and the league office what disciplinary actions Watson may face before the legal process even plays out. I would not, personally, if I'm Stephen Ross, I would not trade for somebody whose future you do not know if it involves football, right?
Yep.
I would not. I don't think Stephen Ross sees it that way. I think Stephen Ross wants to do something that he has never been able to do during his tenure here in Miami as owner, which is figure out the quarterback position. There's no doubt Deshaun Watson is a top five quarterback when he's on the field. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And there's also no doubt that since Dan Marino, the Dolphins have had, I think now the number is 22, 23 starting quarterbacks.
Right.
Personally, I think Tua Tagovailoa can be good.
Yep.
I don't think he can be a top five quarterback in the NFL,
yep,
but I don't think he needs to be.
Yep.
The Dolphins, as I told you before, tried to revamp offensively the weapons. They brought in Will Fuller, supposed to be this deep attack. They draft Jalen Waddle. They believe Devontae Parker can be your wide receiver number one, and they have a lot of belief in Preston Williams as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you pair that with a tight end in Mike Gesicki, who truthfully is a wide receiver. They thought that they brought in what was going to be good enough for Tua. And none of those guys have played a single game together. Fuller has been on the IR. Devontae Parker is in and out of games. Preston Williams in and out of games. That receiving core, none of them have played a full game together.
Wow.
They have not started a full game together. And then I mentioned the offensive line troubles.
Yeah.
All of that mixed together, I mean, you're putting Tua Tagovailoa, essentially, you're failing Tua Tagovailoa. You're putting him in an impossible spot. Now, can he play better? Some of these interceptions we've seen are unacceptable. There's no doubt about it. But that's what second-year quarterbacks do, right?
Yeah.
Second-year quarterbacks make mistakes, and they get better. And most recently against Atlanta, two terrible mistakes at the end of the second and in the middle of the third quarter. But what did he do in the fourth? He and gives you the lead in that game. You left too much time on the clock for Matt Ryan, but he did, and he's shown promise when he's healthy that he can make plays. Guys, he's throwing to Mac Hollins, Ethan Carter, and Durham Smythe. I mean, those are his targets during games, other than Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki.
Sure.
It's unacceptable considering you're paying Will Fuller, what, $10, $11 million this season to sit on the bench?
Yep.
As far as the Deshaun Watson stuff goes, I know the November 2nd trade deadline is coming up, but I would be shocked if they pull a trigger on Deshaun Watson from now until November 2nd if we don't find out any more information in terms of his eligibility moving forward with all the legal stuff happening behind the scenes.
Well, probably not a lot of love lost between Bills and Dolphins fans, but one thing they can probably agree on, just like you guys are trying to replace Marino, they've tried to replace Kelly for a long time up here. It looks like we've beat you guys in that race with Allen, but, you know, we tried with, you know, Todd Collins and Rob Johnson and J.P. Lossman. They thought he was going to be the guy. Then Ralph was the only guy that ever gave Fitz a big contract. I think it was 5 for $50 or something like that in the late aughts. He did not work out, and we finally hit a guy. So we know where you're coming from on that. There's no doubt, and with it being such an offense and quarterback-centric league, it's really about getting that guy. Talk to me from an opponent's perspective. When you think of the Buffalo Bills, what do you think of? What comes to mind for you?
It's the guy you just mentioned. It's Josh Allen. You guys have a guy that can put the ball wherever he wants. He can sling it 70 yards right on the money, and he can make plays with his feet. And the Miami Dolphins, as you mentioned before, they went from one of the best defenses in the NFL. I think you said six in points scored allowed, and now they're dead last in basically every single category. And listen, the Buffalo Bills, you don't expect them to run the ball, in terms of you don't expect them to run the ball as much as they want to pass the ball with Josh Allen. But whatever you guys want to do, you want to have Josh Allen run the ball, for 25 yards, you're going to be able to do it. You want them to hand the ball off to anybody in your backfield, you're going to be able to do it because the Dolphins don't get pressure on the quarterback and the Dolphins can't stop the run this year, despite the fact that Christian Wilkins has Pro Bowl potential. The fact that Zach Sealer has been good and we have this guy Ogba on the defensive line who is very good. So it doesn't make any sense this season why the Dolphins can't stop the rush. Right. They can't pressure the quarterback because they have guys on the defensive line who are talented. It just isn't panning out this season. I don't know why. I can't explain it. It does certainly seem like it falls on Brian Flores, though, because he is taking charge of this Dolphins defense.
Well, it doesn't bode well for you guys. You guys are giving up 29.1 points per game. That's 31 out of 32. The Bills are second in offense with just over 33 points. So that's not a good equation for you. Two real quick things, and then we will cut you loose. Let's say you're sitting in the stands, and Mike Evans runs over, and he accidentally gives you Tom Brady's 600th touchdown pass. What do you ask for in negotiations to give that ball up?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I am not handing that ball to anybody. I'm leaving that stadium with the ball. That's where that guy made a crucial mistake, where he hands the ball off, and the dude ends up getting a nice little package. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. Tom Brady, I think, even gave him a Bitcoin or some sort of cryptocurrency. Like, he made off nicely. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, okay? Yeah. But you hold on to that ball, and you keep all the leverage in your hands. He probably could have asked for $50,000, $100,000. And he probably would have gotten it.
Absolutely.
But I think he made off okay.
Sure. Yep.
I'm telling you right now, that ball doesn't leave my hand. Mm. I'm holding on to that ball harder than any running back ever has on a Bill Belichick offense. Because if not, you know you're getting cut the next day.
Yep.
I think the dude made off okay, though.
Yeah.
I think the 2 year season ticket, $100 Buccaneer dollars or what, $1,000 Buccaneer dollars. Like, he's all right. He'll be all right.
Lastly, I'm always interested in the media markets. You know, Atlanta is always dumped on for not being a great sports market. So you guys have the Heat, the Dolphins, the Panthers, and then you have the U, which all of them have kind of had their ups and downs. Could you rank? I know it probably depends on the year and who's good and who's bad, but what's the strongest following down there for a team?
A lot of people like to say that this is now a basketball town since the Big Three. Make no mistake about it. If the Dolphins get back to elite status in the NCAA, this is a football town. The only franchise here who consistently over the past 2 years giving you a winner. So people here love their Heat basketball.
Sure.
Even now, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, and Bam Adebayo, they've kind of revitalized the space, especially going to the finals in the bubble 2 years. And it's the only organization that has proved to you that they can do things correct. And now even the Florida Panthers, they have one of the best teams in the NHL. You know, they're starting out, people love the Miami Heat because, like I mentioned, they're the only team that seems to give you a winner. But if the Dolphins can ever figure it out, it seems like they can't, but if they could ever figure it out, and if the Miami Hurricanes could ever figure it out, those are, without a doubt, the two organizations that people care about here. And notice I didn't mention the Marlins.
Right, I forgot about them.
Yeah, it seems like everybody down here did as well. Go ahead and look up, whenever you have a moment, look up the attendance numbers in baseball this season.
Mm-hmm.
It is an embarrassment, despite the fact that you have Derek Jeter down here and you know, the whole Project Wolverine, if you remember a couple of years ago when Jeter joined the organization. It seems like they're trying to do things the right way, but listen, in Miami, there's so much to do. This is a flash town. If you're not winning and you're not the Dolphins or the Hurricanes, nobody will show up to your stadium.
No doubt about it. Listen, we'll send these in an email to you so you don't have to write all these down. But here's just a couple quick hitters if you have time when you're in Buffalo to try to stop it. Of course, you know about the Anchor Bar. Buffalo Tap House, that's on Chippewa Street in Buffalo. Sidelines Sports Bar and Grill, that's another great place to go and eat and hang out. That's on Main Street. And then the Thirsty Buffalo, those are probably really, I would say, your best choices. The Old Pink is another good one, and Mr. Good Bar. There's definitely, obviously, a ton of places for wings because it's Buffalo. People think about it immediately, wings. But there's other good food up here as well. And, you know, if it's not too cold, the Harbor State Park is very nice. The waterfront and canal side, the outer harbor, Beautiful scenery, very nice. If you want to get your nerd on, the Buffalo and Erie County Naval and Military Park is very cool. We took our son to that when he was young. That is very nice. So is the Museum of Science in Buffalo. If you're into that kind of stuff, it's very cool. Obviously, there's more stuff in the Western New York area. You're just probably not going to have a lot of time to venture too far out of Buffalo. I tell you to make the trek and come on down to see the Canastillo Living Sign, but that's probably a little far for you. You're not going to be around that long. Alex, thanks for coming on. Safe travels. Enjoy your time in the Nickel City, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, anytime, man. Definitely. I enjoyed it, and have fun. Have fun picking up another W this weekend. We'll be rooting against you guys in the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. I can't lie.
Thanks, Alex. Have a good day.
All right, you too, guys. Take it easy.
No doubt about it. And as he mentioned, a needed W. I feel like this could be a little bit of a trap game and a trip-up game. Everybody's fat and happy. We beat the Chiefs. They were the team that were supposed to go back to the Super Bowl, but you lost that game on Monday night. You're now 4-2. You're battling for the number one seed in home field advantage. The Bengals are 5-2. The Raiders are 5-2. The Titans are 5-2. They will hold the tiebreaker over you with the head-to-head. The Ravens are 5-2. And the Chargers might be for real as well with Justin Herbert. So this is a must-win. You've got to win the games you're supposed to win. And honestly, you need to win this fairly convincingly. This isn't a game you should win 24-21 or 24-17 or even 28-20. This should be a convincing win just like it was in week two. As Alex just mapped out, they are struggling. This is a team you need to take care of at home to keep pace with these other teams in the AFC. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more Bills Mafia talk on this Buffalo Bills Radio Network affiliate station.
You're listening to Bills Mafia Talk.
You can call us and leave us a voicemail or send us a text, 607-252-4BMT. That's 607-252-4BMT. That's 4268. 4-2 Bills are coming off their bye to take on the 1-6 Miami Dolphins. Miami won their first game of the season 17-16 over the New England Patriots. They have lost six straight. Let's bring in our next guest. He's on Twitter at Daniel Oyufusi. Used to be the Ravens beat writer for the Baltimore Sun. He is now the new Miami Dolphins beat writer for the Miami Herald, his first year on the beat, but certainly covering the Ravens, he is familiar with the Buffalo Bills. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on and giving us some of your time.
Of course, thanks for having me, Joe.
So last year, the Dolphins had a really good defense. They were knocking on the door of the playoffs. They were just on the outside looking in. The Bills made sure that the Dolphins did not get in to the postseason in the final week of the regular season last year, beating the Dolphins 56-26. I think people had some expectations of the Dolphins coming in after such a good year under Flores. The defense really improved. The offense was middle of the road. They get off to a fast start with a win over the Patriots. They've now lost six in a row. What are your takeaways from this Dolphins team after seven games?
I mean, really the big takeaway that's been an overall disappointment from top to bottom. You know, coming off a 10-6 season, just barely missing the playoffs. This is supposed to be year three of kind of that rebuild with Brian Flores and general manager Chris Greer having Tua Tagovailoa take over as the full-time starter. You know, this team was supposed to take a step forward, and they've taken multiple steps back. Like you said, there have been injuries, most notably to Tua missing three games with fractured ribs that he suffered against the Bills in week two. But I think that there was overall, you know, I think there was widespread kind of miscalculation of the roster. You know, they've had a lot of young guys, draft picks in their second and third year who haven't really played up to expectation. You know, they kind of got rid of some veterans and inserted some young guys who are still kind of getting acclimated and whatnot. And overall, you know, it's just been top to bottom struggles. You know, I know we're probably going to talk about it. There's been a lot of talk about them trading for Deshaun Watson and what that means for Tua. You know, he's only played 13 starts. I thought he's looked good these past two games. But, you know, whether you're looking at the offensive line or high-priced secondary, I mean, guys just haven't been getting it done. And it's definitely been a real disappointment in Miami.
Well, on the halftime show of Sunday Night Football, Pro Football Talks, Mike Florio reported that conversations and talks have heated up between the Texans and the Dolphins when it comes to Deshaun Watson. I do not know the situation with Tua's contract. I don't know if he would be part of the trade between the Dolphins and Texans. If it would be a three-team trade, Tua would go someplace else. The Dolphins would get Watson. There's obviously some off-the-field issues with Watson that have not been cleared up with some criminal charges, so that is hanging over this situation. What do you think is going to happen? What does the fan base want to happen with this Tua and Watson situation?
I mean, if you just look on Twitter and kind of look at these informal polls that a lot of us Dolphins writers have done, I mean, it looks like there's widespread support for keeping Tua and not pursuing Deshaun Watson. You know, like I said, I've seen a bunch of really informal polls where it's like 70-80% in favor of sticking with Tua, and I understand it. You know, he's only had 13 starts. The last two starts have looked pretty good, albeit in losses. And like you said, there's the elephant in the room with the, you know, close to two dozen allegations of sexual assault can't kind of hang over the head of Watson. And, you know, is it really worth giving up the big bounty that it would require to bring him in and not know what his future holds? I mean, those are legitimate questions. I think that if not for the legal situations, yeah, of course you maybe pursue a guy like that. But still, Tua's really young. I don't think that it's fair to, you know, have every game be a referendum on his career. He did enter the league with some questions, but you know, the team has him now, and I think that it's best to try to build around him. They've tried to, and it hasn't really worked out fully yet, but I don't think that you can necessarily blame it on him. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of working against them, you know, an inconsistent offensive line, a young offensive line that struggled, some pass catchers who have been in and out of the lineup because of injuries, and obviously, yeah, this Watson stuff kind of hanging over his head. So it isn't the best situation and environment for a young quarterback. And I think most people would kind of understand that when they're kind of judging the situation he's been put in.
What was your big takeaways from the week two matchup between the Dolphins and the Bills? Because at that point, we didn't know the Dolphins were going to be sliding for the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. But what did you take away from that week two game?
Yeah, well, I mean, from that game, it was tough to, I mean, I think the first thing you'd say is it was a real wake-up call, and it was really a telling game that the Dolphins really weren't in the Bills' class despite the 10-6 record last year and some of the improvements that we thought were going to show on the field. I mean, it showed that they just were not in the same class, and that's kind of been the case with the Bills winning 6 straight. You know, I think overall it's going to be a really interesting game for the team and for Tua specifically because he's played well. But it's come against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Atlanta Falcons, who are two of the worst defenses in the NFL. Obviously, the Bills are one of the best, if not the best, defense in the NFL, giving up the fewest passing yards. So I think it's going to be a real litmus test. And I think that even on the other side of the ball with the defense, I mean, this is a prideful defense that's struggled throughout the entire season. Josh Allen has played really well against them, and it's going to be a tall task for them to kind of, you know, pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and try to put out a better performance, because I think that they're a lot better than they've been showing. But, you know, whether it's, you know, dumb penalties, missed assignments, or whatever, they just keep on falling short. You know, I don't necessarily think that they can win this game, but I don't think it's a 35-0 margin.
So you mentioned Brian Flores. How long do you think Flores has to turn this thing around? Let's say he's sub 500 this year. Is he on the hot seat then next year?
I would say so. You know, you if you go on Twitter and look at the fans' perspective, I mean, they're ready to get rid of him right now. I think it's kind of crazy. You know, I think that he deserves the grace to finish out this season and see if he can kind of turn things around a bit. But again, you know, it's his third season. I think they kind of overachieved last season, and he's gone through some struggles, most notably not having his starting quarterback for 3 games. So, you know, I don't think this team's going to make the playoffs, but I think that this season is really about evaluating how Tua can progress and how that relationship grows and whatnot. I mean, the only situation I see where maybe he loses his job at the end of the season is if they really go on a bad losing streak. I mean, I've heard and read different reports of him maybe not being the best to get along with and maybe having a strained relationship with some guys. You know, I think those are fair criticisms. So unless something really starts to fall apart toward the end of the season, that's the only way I see him not coming back. But like you said, if they finish sub 500 this season, which it looks like they will, I think next year, you know, he's really going to be on the hot seat. And so will the general manager, Chris Greer. I mean, there's no telling if he'll even make it out of this season.
Well, the team was 10-6 last year, knocking on the door of the playoffs, went down to the last week. The team is now 1-6. They've lost six in a row. Offensively and defensively, they are at the bottom of the league in most categories. Winning is the best deodorant. You mentioned that the fan base wants to move on from Flores. When you lose the support of the fan base and the media, then you're really in trouble. What's the relationship like between the media and Flores?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, winning cures all. And like you said, there's going to be no questioning the coach if everything is going well on the field. You know, I think that when you kind of sit down in a room and, you know, and you're in a media setting, you definitely get that Belichick feel where he's kind of rough around the edges, really, really stoic, really stern, doesn't show a lot of emotion. So, you know, if you're in a room with him, you quickly will say, oh, I can see how he kind of came from that Belichick tree. You know, I've been told that, you know, behind closed doors, he's not like that. Mm. But like you said, it is tough to kind of be like that and kind of, I don't say shtick, but mm-hmm. to kind of personality-wise be like that and kind of endear yourself when you're losing. I think that in recent weeks, he has kind of opened up a bit, cracked a couple jokes, told a couple more stories, been more forthcoming, kind of revealing. We've asked him certain questions, and I think that part of that is due to the fact that, you know, they have been losing, and you can't necessarily, you know, you got to switch it up. You can't keep on being so stern and so stoic and so closed when you're losing games. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, personality-wise, if you just sit in a room with him, you might get that sense that he's kind of from that Belichick tree.
He's on Twitter, at Daniel Oyefusi. That's Oyefusi. He's in his first year as the Miami Dolphins beat writer for the Miami Herald. Before that, though, he was at the Baltimore Sun, where he was the Ravens beat writer. So he has seen the Bills' growth and them improve over the last few years, being with the Ravens and now with the Dolphins. Daniel, talk to me about the growth of this team and Josh Allen specifically over the last couple of years that you have seen the Bills take on the Ravens and the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question because I remember the first time I covered him was the 2019-2020 season when the Ravens went up to Buffalo to play the Bills. And then obviously there was the playoff game. And now watching him in Miami to play the Dolphins, I think that he's just improved so much. You know, I remember that first game in the 2019-2020 season where, you know, you could still kind of tell the accuracy wasn't fully there. He was still kind of coming into his own. And you know, just the improvements that he's made. I know he's done a lot of work in the offseason with different kind of quarterbacks, coaches on his mechanics and whatnot. And it's really a dramatic growth. You know, I honestly had questions about whether last season, I don't want to say it was a fluke, maybe it was an aberration, you know, whether he was going to be able to kind of keep up those numbers. And, you know, right now I'd say he's definitely in the MVP conversation. I know the team and him kind of had a setback against the Tennessee Titans, but they're definitely one of the best teams in the AFC and the NFL. And that's due to him just, you know, really being able to win from the pocket. And, you know, he's a great athlete, but I think the Bills have also done a really great job in kind of building around him, you know, getting Stephon Diggs, having Cole Beasley, having Dawson Knox and Emmanuel Sanders and all these guys. You know, they've done a really good job of kind of building around him. And I think with him and Brian Daboll, you know, I think it's a pairing that, you know, guys are going to have to watch out for a couple of years unless he gets snatched up.
If the Dolphins can pull this upset off on Sunday, which side of the ball for the Dolphins comes up bigger, the offense or the defense?
Man, that's a tough question because the defense has struggled so much this season, and they really struggled against Josh Allen. And the offense hasn't fared, you know, much better. I mean, it sounds kind of cliche and basic, but I think it's going to have to be really all phases of the game, which, you know, we've heard that a lot from Brian Flores talking about playing complimentary football, but it really is. You know, I don't think that this is a game that the Dolphins can necessarily win going back and forth in a, you know, 35-34 game. I don't know if they can necessarily do that. But I also think that, you know, the defense is going to need to force maybe one or two turnovers and give the offense short fields. The offense, it's where they've started really fast in the first quarter. I think they have one of the best first quarter offenses in terms of points, but in the second and third quarters, they really fizzle down and then they get behind and then they, you know, they're kind of playing from behind in the fourth quarter and they're able to kind of get them going because they're kind of in hurry up mode. So I think that the defense is really going to have to step up, force one or two turnovers to Josh Allen, give a short field to the offense, and then kind of capitalize off of those short fields. But again, that's a real tough task for for the Dolphins, and really a Dolphins team that has struggled so much against Josh Allen.
Do you think it's harder for a team like the Dolphins to come to Buffalo in December or January, or now that you're in Miami, a team like New England? Brady always seemed to struggle December coming down to Miami. Do you think it's more difficult for a cold team coming to a more humid area in the winter?
I would say it's tougher to get to a colder environment. I know that I think a lot of these guys, you know, they're in training camp and you know, obviously in workouts. I mean, they're training and practicing and really hot weather and kind of working on their conditioning. But when you go to a frozen place, I mean, you gotta really watch out for the elements in terms of catching the ball, ball handling, just not really focusing on the cold. I mean, I don't know about, I mean, I've only played football in high school, but you know, even walking outside in the winter, I mean, it's just like, it just kind of gets to you a little more and it gets in your head a little bit more than when it's hot. Both aren't the best conditions, but I don't know, something about the cold just feels a lot worse. And I think it's a little bit tougher to focus, especially with the handling of the ball and catching and whatnot in that cold environment.
Which one of these records will never be broken or will be the hardest to break? Either the most wins, whether that be Shula or Belichick, all-time rushing yards or all-time carries, or all-time passing TDs. Brady is at 600-plus now. Which one of those records do you think will never get touched? Just like complete games in baseball at this point and the way the game is played will never be broken.
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I'd have to say Shula, just because, I mean, outside of Belichick, who has really had that longevity
right.
as a coach?
Yeah.
You know, you have to stick around and stick around for a long time and win double-digit games for consecutive seasons. You know, I think that we've seen a lot more quarterbacks kind of play into their late 30s, early 40s, and I think it's possible. I don't think it's that possible, but I think it's a little more possible that maybe somebody sticks around for, you know, 18, 20 seasons, and the way the NFL is going, they're able to throw 30, 35, 40 touchdowns a game and maybe break that record.
Yeah.
But Shula, I don't know if anybody's going to touch that if Belichick doesn't get to it.
All right, last question. If Mike Evans runs over to you and hands you Tom Brady's 600 touchdown pass ball, what do you ask from the Buccaneers and Tom Brady in exchange for the football?
Oh, man. I mean, they were saying that ball is at least $500,000. So if Brady wants it back from me, I'm going to need a million. That's the least, man. They'd have to pry that ball from my big, cold, dead hands to get it back. I wouldn't be letting go of that ball.
Do you want to give a prediction? You don't have to give a score. Do you have a prediction for the game?
Yeah, I got to go with the Bills. I think that between the Watson situation and, you know, all the injuries and just not playing up to their standards, it's not going well for the Dolphins. I think that the Bills probably win this game by 2 touchdowns.
Daniel, great job. Continued success and health to you and yours, and maybe we'll get you on again down the road.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks so much.
All right. Daniel Oyefusi, he is the Miami Dolphins beat writer for the Miami Herald. Don't forget, Buffalo Bills, 4-2 host the 1-6 Miami Dolphins. Pregame at 11 a.m., kickoff at 1, right here on this Buffalo Bills Radio Network affiliate station.